I had no knowledge really of literature or algebra. I had never done any of those things in a formal way.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
My name is Nathalie Zernedden, and I'm a doctoral student at OISE in the Adult Education Department. So I more or less home educated myself. I withdrew myself from the public school system at a very young age and did not return until my late 20s to university to get a formal education. You were asking me why I quit school?
Yeah, you said you withdrew yourself from school.
Right.
Very remarkable. First of all, what made you do that?
I had a very particular view of what I thought education should be. I mean, one can say that I home educated, and what that means is I constructed using the world around me, using community, using resources. I educated myself. But certainly at that age, I would have never, ever called it home education. I mean, I didn't know what that was. I was very young. I left school based on very principled ideas, and I decided that I was going to educate myself. I stopped school when I was in grade 7, and in Quebec, grade 7 is high school. And my elementary school experience was dreadful as well. I was considered a problem child because I was slower. No one took into consideration that I had started school in Germany, came back to Canada, and continued in English, and then was put into a French school. No one in the school system thought, well, maybe there's something else going on for this kid. Maybe there are reasons why she's having trouble concentrating, coming from a family where there were a lot of issues, you know. It was just problematizing the kid at that point. I'm a Francophone, but with a German name, and I was always picked on. I was the kid that was bullied in school, and that stayed with me right up until grade 7. And when I went into high school, it was a large school. There were probably about 1,500 students in it, and it was chaos. It was mayhem in there. Mm-hmm. I was used to being around adults, and I was used to being considered also. I mean, I was raised by my grandparents and surrounded by my great aunts and great uncles. A lot of my aunts and uncles as well. And so they certainly would hear what I had to say on things. And in the school, it wasn't at all like that. It was just chaos. I didn't like the way the teachers treated us. I understood that teachers were also overwhelmed by the system. And school never felt like a safe place for me. And I was very upset. I was continuously bullied, and finally I decided that this was it. I thought that schools were an outrageous place for kids. I found them, they would upset me a lot. I mean, it didn't matter what school I was in. And then finally, I just decided that I was going to manage in life without school. And I would do whatever I needed to not be discriminated against, which is something that I've spoken about in a past interview. And I quit.
So that's what you mean by survival. You had to get out.
Well, yeah, because I also left home shortly after. And what, I was barely 13 years old, and so I had to lie. Mm-hmm. I had to lie to cover my butt to make sure that people would give me jobs, that I lied that I did have an education.
What kind of work did you manage to do?
Oh, I did anything. I was a kid that was very determined. I did what I had to do in order to get work.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
I understood very young, at a very young age, that people are discriminated against for a variety of reasons. You're discriminated against for your social class. You're discriminated against because of, you know, at times your gender, age, race, all kinds of things. I knew that. And I knew that if anybody, you know, would come to know, that no one would hire a kid that if I was going to be forthright and say, I'm 13 years old, I've quit school, I live on my own, and I'm going to work. I wasn't legally allowed to work, so I lied. I lied and lied. I lied about my age. I looked older, so that worked. Because I was responsible, I presented myself in a particular way, and I lied about the fact that I had an education. And no one ever challenged me on it. I was never, ever asked to prove it, to offer my second, you know, my high school diploma. So I went along like that for years. And I got dreadful jobs, dreadful, dreadful jobs, but I did it. And it paid my way. And eventually I got better jobs because I was accumulating experience. Even if they weren't god-awful jobs, mm-hmm. I was still accumulating experience. And I understand in very subtle ways. I mean, none of this was explicit to me. Like, I just knew, in a sense, how to work the system. And I would do that without being aware of it. Today, in hindsight, I look back and I go, oh, my God.
So is it you left home because you had to leave home, even though it was...
Well, I left home because it was also a dysfunctional place. And so I was a very determined kid. I'm still determined, but I certainly was determined to be happy and to take control over my life. And I thought, okay, if these adults aren't going to cut it for me, I just have to take care of myself.
And did you have support? Did you get any support at all? Like just maybe from family or friends?
No, absolutely not. No support whatsoever.
Did you have any friends even? Or was you?
I certainly didn't have any friends my age. And I had a very different kind of childhood, like adolescence, because I was on my own. I had to learn to be very responsible very quickly. I had to learn all kinds of things that I didn't have any notions of. And as I got older, my jobs really got better, and then eventually they led me to travel. I got jobs overseas. I got a job overseas that really opened doors. When I came back to Canada after working, it was something that opened doors for me because people were so intrigued by this experience. And then eventually I ended up at the federal government in Montreal. For some odd reason, at the age of 21 years old, I told myself the only thing that would keep me in Canada was if I worked for the federal government. Where I got that idea from, I have no clue. But I did. I got a job at the federal government. And I loved it. But I also knew I'd be there for 5 years. And 5 years came to pass. And by that time, I was 27 years old. And I said, okay, I'm tired of lying. Yes, I have all this great experience behind me, but I want to be able to tell people that I have an education and that that's true. Mm-hmm. So I decided that I was going to stop lying, and that the first place I really, really stopped lying on was my application for my university. And I wrote that, you know, I didn't have high school, and but I was decided to get an education and so on and so forth. And then I got a letter that refused my, I was told that I wasn't accepted, that I couldn't go to school. I couldn't get a bachelor's. But so I called the department, asked to speak to the to someone in charge, and really asked them how they could veto my decision. I said, how can you do that? It's my choice to go to school. This is my life. How can you tell me no? Based on what? Like, put conditions in place. Fine. But no? Like, that made no sense to me. And eventually, they accepted me. And they did put conditions. And I met them. Mm-hmm. And then a few years later, I graduated. But boy, oh boy, oh boy, did I ever work. Because I'd never done most of these subjects. I mean, I could speak to you about things, many things. But the truth of the matter was, I had no knowledge, really, of literature or algebra. I had never done any of those things in a formal way. So I had to work very hard. I mean, today I'm doing a, which seems like a big joke, in that how did I, you know, life trajectories, to have the kind of start of life that I had, and now today being in a PhD program and advocating for non-formal learning structures.
Yes.
So I think I know what I'm talking about.
And another 100 people just got off of the train and came up through the ground, while another 100 people just got off of the bus and are looking around at another 100 people who got off of the plane and are looking at us who got off of the train and the plane and the bus. Maybe yesterday. It's a city of strangers. Some come to work, some to play. A city of strangers. Some come to stare, some to stay. And every day, the ones who stay can't find each other in the crowded streets and the guarded plot, by the rusty fountains and the dusty trees, or the padded box. And they walk together past the posted walls with a crude remark. Meet you there, or shall we let it go? Did you get my message? Cause I looked in vain. Can we see each other Tuesday if it doesn't rain? Look, I call you in the morning, or my service will explain. And another 100 people just got off of the train. And another 100 people just got off of the train. And another 100 people just got off of the train. Train, bandit, voyou, voleur, schnappant.
Au-dessus de l'île, on voit des oiseaux. Tout autour.
Bandit, voyou, voilà, schnappant.
Qu'est-ce que c'est que c'est hurlement?
Bandit, voyou, voleur, schnappant.
C'est la meute des honnêtes gens. Chasse à l'enfant.
and the guarded paths, by the rusty fountains and the dusty trees with the battered boards. Then they walk together past the posted walls with the crude remarks. And they meet at parties to the friends of friends who they never know. Will you pick me up or do I meet you there? Or shall we let it go? Did you get my message? 'Cause I looked in vain. Can we see each other Tuesday if it doesn't rain? Look, I call you in the morning, though my service will explain. And another hundred people just got off of the train. And another hundred people just got off of the train. Another hundred people just got off of the train. Another.
You are listening to Radio Free School.
You knew what you wanted to do, and you went after it and persisted. That's what it looks like, you know, mm-hmm. that maybe what you learned, I don't know, maybe you want to talk about what you learned from this whole life process, is that you, up to this point, is that when you're going after something, you don't let people just, you won't take no for an answer. It looks like that's basically what this, being in charge of your education, mm-hmm. looks like to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I certainly did not take no as an answer, and I did whatever I felt within reason here. I did what I felt was necessary. And if they asked me to do things, I usually would do it. I mean, I challenged the system in one way, and I'm able to recognize when it's time to challenge it and when it's time to, I don't want to use the word comply, but, you know, that I'd see some value in doing what I was being asked. The thing is, there are lots of stories, you know, that maybe at some later time, but that I'd have to say around education and even post-secondary, because what happened was I tried numerous times as a kid to go back to school. And as a, you know, young adult, I tried. And I always chose to tackle the most challenging subject for me at the time was math. But the teachers and professors, because it was both at university and when I was trying to complete my high school, the equivalency, I had the worst bloody teachers. And they would dissuade me to quit. And because I was so insecure, I would. Until I met this amazing woman at Concordia University, a professor. She, I almost owe my undergrad to her. Had it not been for her and her faith and her dedication and her time and her love, everything, I would not have been able to complete.
So in a sense that, you know, you do need, you can be as self-directed as you wish, but you also do need to have someone that believes in your ability.
Yes.
I find that, yeah. You know, whether it's a parent or a mentor or somebody.
Yeah. A neighbor, mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. But as human beings, I certainly think we need that in our lives in order to be able to
carry on, continue.
Yeah, yeah.
So even though you initially grew up in an environment that was around adults that were more supportive, they didn't support this idea, I guess.
Well, the thing is, I went from living with my family, my primary family, which is mother and father and brothers, to then going with my grandparents. And my extended family didn't really have a say, so I was just able to leave. I mean, I was considered the black sheep of the family, I can assure you of that. And today, no one really understands how I managed to be where I am today. What I'm currently working on right now at OISE, at the Ontario Institute for the Studies of Education, I'm doing my thesis on a life history of a Canadian woman. And the name of the thesis, as it is now, is Wendy Priesnitz, a Canadian pioneer in the home education social movement. Historically, education is a field that's relegated to women. Women at one point didn't have much of a choice as to what they were going to do. They were going to go into nursing or they would go into teaching. So I thought, well, where are their voices? Where are the women the knowledge producers of the work that they're doing. Why is it always men? So I became very preoccupied about finding a Canadian woman in education. And I came across Wendy. And I saw all the work that she had done. And I saw that for the past 35 years, this is what she was doing, had been doing. Her publications, her books of poetry, her involvement in politics. And I was astounded that despite her presence, that still she had not been picked out and integrated in the literature. So I thought, okay, this is it. I'm going to focus my work on doing the life history of a Canadian woman who's dedicated her life to challenging the status quo of education. And to me, that also means challenging patriarchy, the structures of how education is constructed.
Do you want to talk about some of the obstacles you're facing in this work?
The biggest obstacle is that I'm doing it from a so-called feminist perspective, for lack of a better word right now, because feminism is a funny thing. A lot of feminists are dead set against the concept of home education, as Wendy is doing it, or as Wendy promotes it. That's the biggest obstacle, because a lot of feminists think that to advocate for home education, you're putting the woman back into the house.
Yeah.
And that you're relegating her to childcare 24 hours on 7, that you are relegating her to doing the housework again. And they feel that the advancements of feminism, it takes a step back with advocating for home education, that women should be on the workforce. Now, of course, I certainly have nothing against that. I'm aiming for that myself, you know, so that's not the point. But the point is, and this is an obstacle, is trying to find a way of exploring this topic by challenging the type of feminism that relegates women into the workforce, that perpetuates a particular status quo in the structure of the economy as well. That's a huge challenge, and I want to be very careful in when I speak about women only, because my challenge is that, but it's not just women that home educate. I mean, couples do it. And as we said, Gary and I, in part one, it is still predominantly women, but we're seeing a shift, and that shift cannot be denied or it cannot be silenced. It's going to be, I think, my biggest challenge.
Wow.
Because I'm talking about what Wendy is doing as challenging patriarchy, as doing it from a place of love, and love challenges patriarchy. And I'm not talking the romantic kind of love that we've come to associate love to. Talking the struggles of love, you know, the work that, well, what Wendy has dedicated her life to, I think, is a fine example of that. I feel very privileged. She's let me into her life.
Maybe we could talk about the fact that you're now doing a column as well.
So, in the magazine Life Learning, and the idea of the column is to also solicit feedback from the readership on their experience, on women's experience of home education, on issues that predominantly women deal with, on also demystifying things. Well, maybe not so much demystifying, but sharing a bit also my academic experience with the readership. So doing a life history on Wendy and doing, you know, a survey of the literature, what kinds of things might I come across that might be a contradiction to women's experience? Because there's a lack of women's voice in the canon of literature education, I'm exploring that as well. So, and I want to, I suppose, shake up a bit that canon and insert women's experience into that. And so in the first column, I do an introduction of myself and say why I'm doing the column, and that the column may be in the form of an essay. It may be a reflection that I'm going to share with the readers. It could be interviews. For example, for the January-February issue, I interviewed a very, very interesting woman. Last week, I took a power tool workshop for women, and I hadn't a clue of how to use a drill and felt certainly intimidated by power saws and whatnot, but wanted to learn some skills around there. So I took a workshop, a full-day workshop, and built a wooden toolbox and was very, very excited about my day. And the instructor was fabulous. She is self-taught. So when I heard that she was self-taught, I thought, okay, I'm going to interview you, and you're going to tell me about your story. So that's a great topic for life learning. It's about women empowering themselves with tools, with power tools. And it's about self-directed learning, lifelong learning, because this woman, you know, she's in her 40s and she's done some really great things. So each column, I think, is going to be very different, but tries to respect the variety of philosophies that the magazine embodies.
Though our paths in life have parted, and you no longer care for me, but when you're happy with another, won't you sometimes think of me? When the evening sun is sinking down behind the trees and the moon is slowly rising, won't you sometimes think of me? I'll always keep your picture. It means so much to me, and every night I'll pray, dear, that you'll sometimes think of me. Think of days that are gone, dear, days we could recall, if you would only try, dear, but still you blame me for all. When the evening sun is sinking down behind the trees and the moon is slowly rising, won't you sometimes think of me? All I can say is I tried, dear, but you wouldn't let it be. So if you're ever sad and lonely, won't you sometimes think of me? When the evening sun is sinking down behind the trees and the moon is slowly rising, won't you sometimes think of me?
Radio Free School, a show by, for, and about home learners. The end.
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.